Please join me in Genesis chapter number 26, verse number 34, where we learn that when Esau was 40 years old, which means, of course, that his twin brother Jacob is also 40 years old. So we know that this is right around 1976 BC. When Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, to be his wife, and maybe not the same year, but possibly, he also took Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. So 40 was the same age that Yitzhak was when he got married. So this is one of the reasons I've suggested that it seems to have been the norm for this long-lived genetic line that we're looking at to wait until they were in their 40s or older to get married. When you live to be in the middle of your second century, then that's not all that surprising. But this marriage, though, these marriages cause immediate trouble because they are marriages not just simply to foreigners. Remember that Abraham was really big in making sure that his son Yitzhak didn't get married to a Canaanite woman. It was not about ethnicity. It was about religion. The Canaanite people worship many gods and goddesses. And Esau ends up marrying a couple of daughters from that sort of religious upbringing. And so they bring into the tent city, into the community of Yitzhak and Rebecca, the worship of other gods and goddesses. And it says that they made life bitter for Yitzhak and Rebecca. There was this bitterness of spirit because now they have people living in their tent city that don't believe in the one true God. Now, Esau seems to still believe in the one true God, at least as one of his gods, but his wives are bringing in other gods and goddesses, and of course, when they start having kids, guess what? Those kids are going to be exposed to the pagan belief system of their moms. And that becomes a bone of contention with Yitzhak and Rebecca. They're very upset about this. And that is going to be combined with the fact that their other boy is not going to get married. He's going to keep delaying getting married. It is weird to think about it, but we will not see Jacob get married until he's 77 years of age. But we need to see that in the framework of him living a very long life. Best thing to do is to run kind of ratio comparisons. When Esau gets married at 40, because of his long age, it's like he's getting married in his 20s. When Jacob gets married in his upper 70s, it'll be like he is getting married in his late 30s or maybe the very beginning of his 40s. And so that makes it a little bit more understandable, although we would still think, wow, why did he wait so long to get married? The next thing that we need to talk about before we move into chapter 27 is the death of Uncle Ishmael, or Brother Ishmael, if we're thinking about Yitzhak. And in order to do this, we've got to go back to a chapter we've already been through, chapter number 25, which has the genealogy of Ishmael's family. But if you go down to verse number 12, it says this: "These are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar, the Egyptian, Sarah's wife, bore to Abraham. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael, named in order of their birth: Nebaioth, the firstborn; Keter, Abiel, Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Massa, Hadad, Tema, Yeter, Naphish, and Kedema. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their villages, by their encampments: 12 princes according to their tribes." So the Ishmaelite family has been growing all this time that we've been watching the family of Yitzhak. And so now we read that he passes away. Ishmael dies. "These are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years old." So that puts it right around 1939 BC, that he breathed his last, and then he died and was gathered to his people, meaning they had a big family funeral. And I am absolutely positive in my heart that Yitzhak went to his half-brother's funeral. Yitzhak would have been 13 years younger than him. And so they're fairly close in age. And he probably would have taken his sons with him to this funeral. They are going to be, let's see, take 60 off of that. So we're talking about 57, something like that, 57 years of age. So they all go to the funeral, and then they come back, and they continue their lives for a little bit longer until we get to the next part of the story of Yitzhak, and that's in chapter 27. When Yitzhak was old, how old? Well, this is the interesting part, the reason why I wanted to focus on Ishmael first. We can run the chronological numbers, and we find out that he was 137 years old when this story takes place. And so he is concerned that he is going the same way as his half-brother, that his death is upon him. He probably started feeling poorly, maybe became bedridden for a while from some sort of illness. And so he gets to thinking that he's going to die, especially since the next part of the story says his eyes were dim so that he could not see. So he has some sort of eye problem, probably cataracts. And so here at 137 years age, same age as his brother, his half-brother when he died, he gets it in his head that he's going to die, and he wants to take care of family business. So it says that he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son?" And he said, "Here I am." And he said, "Behold, I am about to, behold, I am old. I don't know the day of my death. So I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to be able to hold out. So do this for me." Verse 3, "Take your weapons, your quiver, your bow. Go out into the field and hunt game for me, and prepare for me delicious food, such as I love. Bring it to me, so that I may eat and that my soul may bless you before I die." So Yitzhak is telling Esau, I think that I am not much longer for this world, and I want to give the official blessing to my firstborn son before I pass away. I want to turn everything over to you and make it clear that the blessing of God through Abraham and Isaac will now rest on Esau. Now, we know there's a little bit of a problem with that, don't we? Because he already sold his birthright. It's interesting that Yitzhak doesn't seem to know anything about that. Rebekah does, though. And Rebekah has apparently overheard what Yitzhak just told Esau. And so she has decided that she needs to intervene. Now, I'm going to give you my opinion. I think she should have left it alone. I think God would have taken care of it in his own way. But she does decide to intervene. And by doing so, she brings more conflict into the family than was necessary. Now, we already know that there's a little bit of conflict there because Yitzhak gravitates toward Esau because they get along well, and possibly because Esau is slightly the elder son and therefore the presumed heir, but he also likes hunting game and Yitzhak's into that sort of thing and enjoys eating that wild food, while Rebekah and Jacob seem to be two peas in the same pod. He likes to hang around Tent City and run things. His mom's been running them, doing it even more now that Yitzhak is not feeling all that well and is apparently, for all practical purposes, blind and can't see. And so she decides to intervene on her son's behalf. Now, some people will point out, well, she knew that the blessing was supposed to go to the younger son because that's what she was told in a prophecy when they were still inside of her. And that's true. That prophecy was made. But I think it's a cause-effect error. Rebekah didn't need to cause that effect. God was letting her know that this is how it will play out. She didn't need to help him, but she will do so anyway. So verse number 5, and by the way, maybe I'll mention this right now. Sometimes I think it is appropriate for us to critique the characters in these stories for their choices for this reason. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter number 10 that all these stories have been written down for our benefit, that we might not engage in the same sinful behavior, the same bad choices. So there are lessons to be learned here, and the only way we learn lessons from the past is to be honest in our critiquing of those actions. So we don't need to help God out. God will take care of seeing his promises through. We don't need to find a way to make those promises come true. Back to the text. Genesis 27, verse 5. Now Rebekah was listening when Yitzhak spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and to bring it, so Esau just left, Rebekah said to her son, Yaakov, to Jacob, I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me some game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before he who is before I die. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. You go to the flock, you bring me two good young goats, so that I may prepare them delicious food for your father, such as he loves. So she is going to do a little culinary tweaking of some tame goat meat to make it taste like wild game meat. So she's good at cooking. She's well experienced, I'm sure. If Jacob is 137, that almost guarantees she's over 100 herself. And so she also says, verse number 10, you, Jacob, are going to bring it to your father to eat so that he may bless you before he dies. So she lets him in on this intent that we're going to trick your dad into saying the special words to you so that you receive the blessing that God said you're going to receive and the inheritance rights that you purchased from your brother with a bowl of red stuff. So we're going to correct the record. We're going to take care of business here. Now, Jacob, who, remember, he's like 77, but he is a man that is not yet married, that is focused on taking care of business around Tent City, and he spends pretty much every day with mom doing that. But he also has interactions with his dad. And he says, behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man. So remember that Esau has some sort of condition that has made him super, super hairy. He came out that way at his birth. So these guys are not identical twins. And Jacob says, perhaps my father will feel me in the process of this deception, and I will seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon me and not a blessing. He says, Mom, think about it. If Dad touches me on my arms or on my neck, he's going to know right away I'm not Esau because I'm not hairy like Esau is. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to put a curse of God on me, not a curse, not a blessing of God on me. This is going to backfire on us, Mom. His mother said to him, let your curse be on me, my son. Only bring, obey my voice, go bring them to me. So basically, don't you worry about that. I've got this covered. So he went, he took them and brought them to his mother. His mother prepared delicious food such as his father loved. And then Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her older son, which were with her in the house. Now, why does she have them? We can only guess. It could be that they're keepsakes, could be that she's helping out by fixing them up, sewing up some tears in them and things like that. Maybe she doesn't trust her daughters-in-law to take good care of her son Esau, therefore she takes care of the sewing. Whatever the reason is, she has these clothes of Esau in her own house. Notice it says house there, and so it's possible that they're starting to build more permanent structures here at Beersheba now. And she put them on Jacob, her younger son. Why? Well, we'll actually see the reason why later, but it is this. Clothing retains the smell of those that wear it the most. And so this will help him smell more like Esau. And then she took care of the other possible problem. She took the skins of the young goats and she put them on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. Now, you have to think about this. In their culture, in their time period, you wore a long robe, and the only part of your skin that could be open to the sun's effects was the lower part of your arm and your hands and the back of your neck. I mean, you wore a hat on your head, even though you probably had some good hair. The men had beards that came down onto the front of their necks. And so the back of the neck would have been open to possibly being touched by Yitzhak in the process of the blessing, and maybe the arms. That's about the only part. So that's the only part that she has to make sure is hairy like Esau. So she takes these goat skins, turns them into gloves. This is some pretty quick seamstress stuff going on here, isn't it? And she also makes something to go around the back of his neck. Now, this also helps us understand how hairy Esau really is. If you've ever gone to some zoo or some open farm and petted goats, you know how furry they are, how hairy they are. Well, that's how he feels. So she did all that, gets him all dressed up, and now they're ready to pull it off. She put the delicious food and the bread which she'd prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. So he went in to his father. So now it's all up to him. And by the way, that is why he bears the responsibility. It is true that his mom is pushing him. She is making choices that she should not have made. But he could have said no. And he didn't. So he is completely and totally responsible for what happens next. So he went into his father and he said, "My father," now appreciate the fact that he may sound similar to his brother, but their voice qualities are going to be distinguishable by those that know them. So even if he tries to pretend to be Esau and even tries to change his voice to sound more like Esau's voice, it's not quite going to be right, is it? So he says, "My father," and he said, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" Now, he can't see him. Remember, he's got cataracts, apparently, that keep him blind. "So who are you, my son?" And Jacob said, "I'm Esau, your firstborn. I've done as you told me. Now, sit up." So he's in bed, laying down. "Sit up, eat of my game, that your soul may bless me." But Yitzhak said to his son, "How is it that you found it so quickly, my son?" Because it's faster than he anticipated. He answered, "Because he who is your God granted me success." Wow. Now, this is a sad part of the deception here, is that Jacob even tries to play the God card. "God blessed me. That's why I shot this wild animal so quick and was able to prepare the food." Verse 21, "Then Yitzhak said to Jacob, 'Please come near that I may feel you, my son, to know that whether you are really my son Esau or not.' So Jacob went near to Yitzhak, his father, who felt him exactly as Jacob expected." So Yitzhak says, "It's the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." So he feels that furry back of the hand and the lower part of the arm that is in this glove that may even be glued down onto his hands by mom. And so it feels much more like Esau, even though he's suspecting the voice sounds much more like Jacob's voice. He did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. He said, "Are you really my son Esau?" So he's still suspicious even after feeling him. He answered, "Well, I am." And then he said, bring it near to me, that I may eat of my son's game and bless you. So bring the food here. Let's see whether or not it's Esau's food. So he brought it near to him, and he ate, and he drank, brought him wine, he drank. And then his father, Yitzhak, said to him, come near and kiss me, my son. So come over here and give me a close hug. And so he came near, and he kissed him. And Yitzhak smelled the smell of his garments. So exactly as mom had planned, that the Esau smell would still be there. And he blessed him, and he said, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of the field that he who his has blessed. And then he proceeds into the official blessing. May God give you the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. So may the earth produce for you well beyond what is normal. Let peoples serve you and nations, ethnic groups, bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. So that makes him the next patriarch of Tent City. He is going to be the replacement of Yitzhak by those words. And then the Abrahamic blessing. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. So the official words have now been spoken. They cannot be taken back. And then Isaac lets him go. And for the rest of the story, we have to wait until the next time we can get into God's word together.